Gomez, Reel 3. When the decision was made to withdraw from Kowloon, was that a blow to your morale when everything withdrew to Hong Kong Island? That would be on the 11th, wouldn't it?
We were not thinking of anything at all. We thought that that was the right thing to do. We were happy that more guns and more men were coming back to Hong Kong Island to make it a fortress stronger, to reinforce our positions. We thought in terms of reinforcements to us, rather than anything else.
Were you in touch with your wife at all? Did you know what had happened to your wife on Kowloon?
I was in the pillbox, and an order came through to send out the fighting patrol to report to the volunteer headquarters. Our adjutant, Major Neville Thursby, of the King's Shropshire Light Infantry, who was an excellent adjutant of the volunteers. So I was assigned as a corporal at that time with seven men, and we had to travel light. We had four grenades, 20 rounds, our rifle and fixed bayonet, and that's all we had. And we moved up to volunteer headquarters. The headquarters was where at the foot of Garden Road on the left-hand side, where there's now a big building. At one time, it was a Hilton Hotel. Now it's a Chong Kong Center. Then I met my adjutant, who was a very stern man, but an excellent soldier, and we admired him, and he normally stuttered. I didn't stutter, but when I reported to him that day, I was really shaken. I stuttered. And so did he, and we both stuttered, and he broke out into laughter. And he put his arm around me, which was quite unmilitary, and he said, call me by my name, not Corporal Gomez, and he said, we want you and your men to go up to May Road, where the volunteer family and other families are located, and protect them. There are no friendly troops in sight. It has been reported that people have been flashing lights to the enemy artillery across the way. So we moved up to where the families were, and it was beginning to get dark, and we had to move up in fighting patrol order. That one was looking right, and the other was looking left, and the other looking back, so that had eyes on all sides as we approached, and we had to approach silently. We did not want the enemy to hear us, but with ammunition boots, tin hats, and our equipment, we sounded more like a pack of wild elephants going up hillsides, and anybody could hear us a mile away. And that may be a good thing, because it surely scared away everybody else, or hoped that they would fire at us. Anyway, we got up to the families, and there I had another hot meal, which I hadn't had for a few days. It was the 12th, I think. And much to my joy, I saw my wife there among the other families of the volunteers. She told me that my friend Charlie McIntosh of the Supply Corps knew where she was, my house. We were spending the weekends together. He had gone to my house, picked my wife up with her, and took her along in the army truck, because everybody in panic wanted to cross the harbor. So the army held the hard point, and nobody could go across. And if she were alone, she wouldn't have been allowed to go up over. But being in the military escort, she was taken over and put in there. And I saw all the wives of the other volunteers and the people who were in the pillbox with me. And we were all very happy because we could bring in very good news to the wife, to the family, to the people in the pillboxes. And it spread very quickly. We stayed the whole night there, and I had orders to report at 700 hours. In the morning when I reported, I was told to stay until noon, and at noon I was ordered to go back to my pillbox. Now, I did not know the real reason for this fighting patrol going out until I read a book called Prisoner of the Turnip Heads by Police Superintendent Wright Knuth. It appeared that the Japanese had negotiated with the Triads people to liquidate the families on the hills in Ley Road. And the British had, this information was passed to the British by Admiral Chan Chek, who was the head of the Chinese people in Hong Kong. Admiral Chan Chek was requested by the British to negotiate because the Japanese were paying them money and maybe we could pay them more. But the British, I understand, were not very generous. However, the Triads realized that their cover was blown, that the Chinese authorities knew of their plot, and they decided to go with to be neutral and collect money from both sides and do nothing. And when I was assured that nothing would be done, I was told to go back. But I didn't know the reason until I read the book. And about the rescue of Admiral Chan Chek, I don't know what I'm going to tell now or later. During the Battle of Hong Kong, for the first few days before the evacuation of Kowloon, there were two or three passenger planes of the CNAC, China National Aviation Corporation, hidden by the British in a corner of the airfield, unbeknown to anybody, not even the Japs, of course. The Chinese, the story has it, Madam Chiang Kai-shek herself was here. They were put on board these planes, the VIPs of China and Britain that went to Hong Kong, left on these planes. There were two or three flights out of Hong Kong in pitch darkness from Hong Kong to Chungking. They searched frantically for Admiral Chan Chek. They couldn't find him. He was very securely hidden. And they were desperate, but they couldn't hold the plane back, so the planes went. And among them was Colonel Harry Owen Hughes of the volunteers to form a defensive and liaison group outside of Hong Kong, because Hong Kong was most likely expected to fall. After the battle, almost at the time of the surrender, we had a fleet of motor torpedo boats that had performed valiant action in the harbor. The first one went to with guns blazing, and they shot the Japanese in the harbor, trying to cross over. They just sunk them with tremendous success, causing heavy casualties. But unfortunately, the second and third most torpedo boats that went out were shot out of the water because the Japanese artillery had already been now on the alert and they were very accurate. But there was one left and they kept that and they searched frantically. That was escape ship and they eventually found Admiral Chenchak. Put them on board this water torpedo boat and they went to somewhere around Nurse Bay. Here, they could not leave the boat, beach the boat, because they'll give away their position. So they fixed the steering out to sea. They all jumped out of the boat, and most of the people went out to sea and disappeared until the fuel ran out. So nobody knew where they landed. Now they swam ashore. Admiral Chenchak had one leg, a wooden leg. The wooden leg was an obstacle to his swimming. So to save his life, he unstrapped his wooden leg. Some say he had gold bars in that wooden leg, and that's why. But anyhow, when he reached the shore, he could not swim, he could not walk. He could swim, but he could not walk. So somebody had to hump him on the back all the way to Wai Chau, and from Wai Chau into Free China. I heard the story many years afterwards when I was in a hotel in Taipei. The manager there recognized me, my name, and invited me to breakfast and took me to his private office and showed me all his credentials and papers. He was given the OBE. He was a man on the MTB also. He was also an intelligence officer. And he was a man who had humped Admiral Chenchak most of the way to my job.
This Mr. Hughes, who went over, of the volunteers, was he the elderly gentleman? Was he quite old?
Very old, old. There were two, there was the father and the son. This was a son.
Because I understand the father was an old man, wasn't
he? Yes.
But in this special battalion, was it, of the volunteers?
The Fusiliers.
Fusiliers.
We called them the Fusiliers. They were all 6 years of age or older. Also Owen Hughes. But it was a son who went away, I think so. The old man Hughes. And they defended North Point. The Japanese were astounded when they found these old men. They took no prisoners. So all the young people were put on one side and bayoneted. And all the old men, they thought they let them go. That's most likely.
But did they put up a good fight in the battle, the Fusiliers?
Yes, they did. They did this admirable work. Because the Japanese could not have the... They held up the Japanese advance considerably.
So, when the Japanese invaded, you know, when they actually came to Hong Kong, which would have been, what, about the 18th, was it, when they arrived on Hong Kong?
Of the 18th, when they... attack, and of course this I mentioned to you, the attack from Lai Moon, where they knew exactly which guns were to silence and what to shoot, and they got everything mapped out. So they landed at Lai Moon, and they came over at the Taiko shipyard, where number 6 volunteer Portuguese company was, and they were the first volunteers that went into action. And young Noronha on his gun was among the first to be wiped out.
Yes, did many of them survive that attack?
Oh, yes, some of them.
What was your experience once the Japanese came to Hong Kong? What was your experience of them? Could you tell me about the fighting in your area?
Well, fortunately, there was no fighting in my area. We were all... Though I had sent up twice on fighting patrol. They were both false alarms, and we were held in reserve. But we had to be in our positions because they were coming from all sides. But fortunately, they didn't come from our side. They went from the other side.
Yes, because you were on the west of the island, yeah, weren't you? Yeah. And they arrived on the east, did they?
There was, well, it was a hand of fate, because we had received orders to move to Wong Nai Chung Gap, and to report to a place behind the Supreme Court, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank building, for transport. So we packed up and we marched down to that area by truck and man foot to that area. In the meantime, the heavy guns in Stony Cutters Island, which is now joined to the mainland, they reclaimed all the way up, were creating havoc on the advancing Japanese troops. So the Japanese artillery and air force bomb that would make that position untenable to the British. Among them was the number 3 machine gun company. Number 3 machine gun company had previously carried out maneuvers and exercise in that area, and so did number 5 machine gun company. Number five, my company was ordered to that area. But number 3 had to retreat from Green Island on short notice. And they came over, and their commanding officer, while standing on ceremonies, they picked on all the transport they could get, and off they went to the Wong Nai Chung Gap. When we arrived there was no transport. We were frantically, and we were told to go back to your position. So we went back to our position, very unhappy that number 3 company had taken over our transport and taken over our position at Wong Nai Chung Gap. Number 3 company fought valiantly. They lost 30% of their men and almost all of their officers. Only one or two survived.
It could have been you, yes.
It could have been my company. And that's why I gave it the name of Nicholas Jeffer, because he was the machine gun in Wong Nai Chung Gap. And he told me after. And in the pillbox, we had barbed wire, Constantino wire all around us. But when we were just advancing in this position and we had no more rounds, we had to move out of it as fast as we could. Because I went through all that barbed wire and Constantino in a flash. As though there were no barbed wire at all.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Otherwise it crackles. No, that's fine. It's just when you hold it, does some.
Okay.
It crackles. Yes, it's fine. That's really fine. Yes. So, you
can tell you the story of Wong Nai Chung Gap.
Yes. So that was something you narrowly missed, really.
Yes.
That, yes. And then you went back to Mount Davis, Mount Davis, yes. What sort of state were you in then? What sort of state were you in? Because this was quite a long time,
yes,
wasn't it? You know, had you been given food and were you getting plenty of ammunition if you needed it?
Well, we were very short of ammunition. No further ammunition came to us because they all went to Stanley and into other positions. Well, of course, food had to come to us. We could find water and food. But during one of my sorties out in the fighting patrol, I'd come to town, because I had to come to town, and I went to the Hong Kong Hotel. There were a lot of people there. Well, we had a meal there, and I went to a shop and got bluebells at the corner of Pedder Street and Queens Road Central. And, of course, everything was sold out, and I had to buy myself two bars of Star chocolate, which is cooking chocolates, and a bottle of Horlicks malted milk tablets. They were having small little bottles like whiskey plus. And I didn't realize at that time, I bought it just because there was nothing else to buy. And I bought three tins of cigarettes, and I put in my kit bag. And I didn't realize at that time that four tablets of malted milk tablets was what I could ration myself for a meal afterwards. And that bar of chocolate, of course, the bar of chocolate helped for some time. And those three tins of cigarettes was something like $300,000 in the bank. Because with cigarettes, I could buy anything in the camp. I bought myself a Rolls razor for one tin of cigarettes, and I could shave throughout the camp until after the war, somebody stole my kit bag with all my records and diary and my Rolls razor.
Yes, I'm going to ask you later about the camp. But did you find when you went out on your patrols, was law and order still being kept, or was there looting and a breakdown of sort of law and order?
We didn't hear much about looting or anything, but there must have been some looting and, of course, some panic. But in town, it was all right. We were just in town. But we were very busy. We were thinking of getting something and getting back to our headquarters there and try to get news of what's happening outside the world.
Yes, were you getting news of how the battle was going, and particularly the Japanese behaviour? Were you learning about some of the atrocities?
No, we did not hear anything until afterwards. We had no information. I had a copy of the South China Morning Post, which was just a piece of paper about A4 size, printed on, I think, on the western side, and that was Christmas 1941, Good Cheer, and there was a little column, small little column, that said that General Yuan Mao and troops were approaching the frontier of Kowloon.
Were you hoping that the Chinese would come and help?
Yeah.
Was this the hope that the...
That was to keep up the morale of the troops. But some were skeptical, some we didn't know what to believe, because the Canadians with us down the road were full of all stories and rumors, you know. When it was all over, we didn't know whether we had won or lost.
You were saying earlier you got on very well with the Canadians, is that right?
Yes.
You said earlier you had very good relations
with the Canadians. Particularly in the prison, before and in the prison camp. The Canadians had all the news. And in the prison camp, the Canadians were Catholic regiment. And the number 5 machine gun company were also Catholic regiments.
Given what you said earlier, Arthur, that you treated the Japanese, you thought of them with contempt.
Yeah.
When you were saying, were you surprised at the way they were fighting?
Yes. We thought that they were very efficient afterwards. They didn't bother about us at all. They were very busy laying telephone lines, communicating, cutting up supplies, but they seemed to be able to improvise very efficiently. And we were spoiled. We didn't have to. We never improvised anything. We had it all cut and dried for us. We had a proper equipment and everything else there. In the Japanese army, where they had learned to improvise everything.
So that the quality of their troops was high, would you say?
They seem to be very shoddily dressed in uniform, but their morale, their fighting capacity were excellent. They were good soldiers. They had stamina and energy on the meager on food that they were eating, because as prisoners, we were starving. And of course, they had better food than we had, but not very much better. It was rice and some turnips and a piece of fish or something. And of course, we had just the rice and no turnips and no fish.
Well, I hope you're going to tell me about that next time, Arthur. And thank you very much for today's session.